Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Dennis Prager Show, where we try to clarify life. So what works, my friends? What works in trying to get people out of poverty, get nations, or indeed, in one case at least, an entire continent out of poverty? Is it the moral good of giving charity? Does that work? Well, I have a major thinker online here. She worked at Goldman Sachs for 8 years, worked with the World Bank. Her name is Dambisa Moyo. She is originally from Zambia in Africa. She has a PhD in economics from Oxford and a master's from Harvard at the John F. Kennedy School of Government. She juggles 12 balls at the same time. This is quite a woman. And by the way, actually harder than juggling 12 balls, you have a very positive comments from Steve Forbes and Kofi Annan. I have to believe the only person in history to have gotten accolades from the two of them for the exact same thing.
That's probably right.
that's really something. Steve Forbes, by the way, folks, whom on economic matters I have the greatest admiration for, wrote, "The wisdom contained here, if absorbed by African and global policymakers, will turn this chronically depressed continent into an inspiring miracle of dazzling economic growth." We have, that is in the West, we have, the book is Dead Aid, which is already powerful, Why Aid is Not Working and How There is a Better Way for Africa. And even folks, if you're not terribly interested in Africa, I happen to be, as you know, I took my last listener cruise to Africa. But even if you're not interested specifically in Africa, this is the largest question, or one of the largest in the world. How do you get nations out of poverty? And we have tried, or at least one try, Hollywood has tried, and policymakers. More than $1 trillion in development-related aid has been transferred from rich countries to Africa. Of course, the T word is not much today, ironically. It's been thrown about so much. But you, as an African yourself, have a lot of thoughts on this. And by the way, folks, the book is both clear and under 200 pages. So there's a lot to be commended here. Anyway, it's a pleasure to meet you, even if over by telephone, Dambisa Moyo.
Thank you for having me on your show.
You're very welcome. All right, so what did we do wrong?
Well, I think the fundamental problem has been that there is one attitude and approach when dealing with the rest of the world, so whether it's Europe or America or China or India, and there's a completely different method of approaching the issues of poverty when it comes to Africa. When we think about the United States and Europe or the emerging world, such as Brazil, China, India, and so on, we think about building in incentives and encouraging job creation. Whereas when it comes to discussions about Africa, we immediately put on our pity hats, and our approach in terms of policymaking is one in which we intervene by providing aid, which ultimately does not provide incentives for people to get jobs, and it doesn't incentivize the government to do the right thing, which is to help create an environment where jobs can flourish and the private sector can actually grow.
You know, I just need to tell you, and I know you care about big ideas, which is animates this program, that love. And I increasingly find pity to be a one of the most double-edged sword of human reactions to people.
Yeah.
It seems wonderful, but when put into practice, it's not.
That's exactly right. And I think, I think there's a reason why, to paraphrase the quote, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I think that's exactly right. I mean, you look across the African continent, and we're now in a situation where in the 1970s, less than 10% of the population was living in dire poverty. Usually it's called less than a dollar a day. Now that number is over 70% across the continent. And this is over a period where there's been over $1 trillion of aid that has gone to Africa.
I'm sorry, what was the original date?
less than 10% of the population in the 1970s.
Unbelievable.
That is exactly right.
From 10% to 70%?
Over 70% in many, and it's much higher in many other African countries.
And this was the time of the greatest amount of aid.
That's exactly right.
And they're correlated. They don't happen to be coincidental.
Well, my thesis is that they are completely correlated. I won't bore you with the top 10 reasons why aid doesn't work. Otherwise, you might not go and buy the book.
No. Bore me with it, with three of the 10.
Sure. In essence, the most obvious one is corruption. The fact that, by and large, a lot of this aid has not and does not reach the intended purpose. But even if it were to reach its intended purpose, the problem with giving money for something for nothing, wherever you are in the world, ultimately does not create the right incentives to actually spur people to be highly productive and innovative in terms of developing new ideas and new products. But I think if there's one thing that aid does, there's a whole host of other things, like the fact that it creates inflation, it creates a debt burden, it's a cause for civil war and so on. But if there's one thing that I think makes the aid system particularly abhorrent from the perspective of many Africans is that it disenfranchises African citizens. We do not and are not able to hold our governments accountable to us because they very much spend a lot of time courting international donors for more money. They spend a lot of time, even the best African governments, spend a lot of time with their revolving doors of NGOs, which are non-governmental organizations, and international donor agencies coming through, each of them with their own agenda. And this is a complete and utter waste of time. You find that things like education, healthcare, security, and infrastructure, which are basic things that Americans expect their governments to at most provide or deliver these goods, but at a minimum to provide oversight for, many African countries, it's actually completely delivered and provided for by international agencies. So it begs the questions, what is it exactly that African governments are doing? Why should Africans be bothered to go and elect government officials if ultimately they're not really doing anything?
And why should I, the individual African, go and start a business?
Absolutely. In many African countries, and I talk about this in the book, in some African countries, it can take up to 2 years to get a business license. This is not an environment where the government encourages private sector development and actually lives or dies by the number of its citizens that are entrepreneurs. If these countries did care, they would create an environment where you could foster private sector development, not kill it off by creating such layers of bureaucracy, such as the ones I just described, that completely discourage private investment and entrepreneurship.
Now, can you give examples of countries that have, or even are there in Africa, that have decided not to go the Give Us Charity route?
Absolutely. No surprise, they've done incredibly well. Places like South Africa, places like Botswana, we've seen tremendous increases in growth in these countries, a reduction in poverty, which is unseen or unheard of across the rest of the continent. And it actually is no surprise that these two countries in particular are considered middle-income countries. They have adopted a very different approach. They don't take aid to the degree that other African countries do. And they've been rewarded for the approach that they've adopted.
What would you say if you, or maybe you have said it, have you ever met Bono?
I have, actually, once at a party at a conference.
What would you say to him if you could have an hour with him?
Well, I think the first thing that would be important to clarify is that there are essentially three types of aid. There's humanitarian or emergency aid. So I was just in the States. When you have a problem like the floods that you had in Fargo or, Katrina or earthquakes or tsunami, of course, there's a moral imperative as human beings for us to step in and assist our fellow human beings. That's not the type of aid I'm talking about in this book. Then, of course, there's charitable aid as well, which is the types of aid that many of the celebrities associate themselves with. So this is a type of intervention to provide mosquito nets or to provide HIV/AIDS drugs or that kind of maybe a girl scholarship going to a student in Africa, a girl in Africa. Those two types of aid have serious problems. But neither of them are addressed in this book, because this book is about the third type of aid, which is government-to-government aid.
All right. We'll talk about that in a moment. Sure. By the way, where are you right now?
I'm in London. I just got back from New York.
You know, gentlemen here, why do we get clearer reception to calls to London than in America? You sound like you're across the street. All right, we'll be back in a moment. This is important. It affects us in America, too, not only in terms of aid, but in terms of policies here. If you give people something for nothing, it's not good. The book is Dead Aid. Back in a moment. I'm Dennis Prager. Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager. All I could say is she is good. Dambisa Moyo. Even better than her credentials. The book is Dead Aid. And it is for all of you who think that charity is the solution to poverty, whether it is internal as a domestic policy or internationally. She herself is African from Zambia. She's in London now. Are you teaching at any university, or are you in the financial sector?
I have been in the financial sector for the past 8 years. I actually have another book coming out, so I'm working on that full-time right now, and also marketing and meeting people about my current book, Dead Aid.
What is the next book about?
The next book is called How the West Was Lost, and it's basically about the long-term reasons why we've ended up in this financial crisis as a global society, but also about the rise of the rest. So the fact that we've got some new emerging economies from the obviously the Chinas and Indias and so on, and what the implications will be for economics going forward.
Oh, good. We'll talk about that as well. You have a lot to say, obviously, and the clarity is also clear. I don't normally just extol the virtues of my guests, so I want you to know that, especially if they have been at both Oxford and Harvard. I usually hold that against them. So you've really overcome major obstacles here.
I'm glad to hear that.
You go to Africa. I've been there a number of times, and I speak about it on my show, and it breaks my heart, actually. There is so much that could go right in Africa, and everything seems to have gone wrong. It seems to truly be a benighted continent. Mm-hmm. And our Western notions, I'll give you one. Are you familiar with Peter Singer at Princeton?
Yes, I am.
Just for my listeners' interest, and I have talked about this man in other contexts because he's the author of Animal Liberation. He's the father of the animal rights movement. Mm-hmm. And he is considered by many academics as the, you know, a leading, if not the leading, ethicist today. And he wrote a number of years ago in the New York Times Magazine that we are obligated, all of us in the West, to downsize our homes, our cars, our incomes, and give the rest of it to Africa. And he's a living embodiment of what you're saying went wrong.
Absolutely. We have currently, across the African continent, over 60% of Africa's population is under the age of 24. In many African countries, over 50% of the population is under the age of 15. To suggest that Africans of this young generation should sit at home waiting for largesse and handouts from the United States and the rest of the world is completely absurd. The world is missing out on amazing engineers, teachers, doctors, scientists, artists, musicians, and so on from that amazing continent because of this mindset of pity, and I just think it's completely unacceptable that while we turn around and we know what actually works in developing the world, around the world, we've seen China do it, we've seen India do it, we've seen South Africa do it, we are still pushing a product that has no evidence of working anywhere in the world. There is not a single country on this earth that could say today that it has actually achieved long-term growth and reduced poverty by relying on aid to the degree that African countries rely on aid today.
I don't know your politics, and I'm not even interested in pushing that, but I will say for me, since my listeners do know my politics, I tell my liberal friends, and I have for about 30 years now, why don't you preach what you practice?
Yeah.
See, we tell people to practice what they preach. I tell my liberal friends to preach what they practice. They don't give their kids charity.
Yep.
They demand that they work hard.
That's right.
And then when it comes to others, all of a sudden they invert their own value system and believe in handing out without earning.
Which is a complete farce. Africans do not want to be dependent on other people. And I'm not claiming to speak on behalf of a billion Africans, but I will say that the reality is we want what the rest of the world wants. It's not some bizarre thing to be African. We want our children to have good education. We want good infrastructure. We want decent health care. It is not a big mystery. So to provide, in terms of long-term economic growth policies, to have one set of policies for the rest of the world and to have a completely different set of policies and a different approach when it comes to Africans is completely intellectually dishonest, and it's completely wrong.
Well, then let me ask you the and use the R word. I'm not looking for an answer. I'm only looking for an honest answer. I don't have an agenda on this question, but why the different values vis-a-vis Africans? Is there a racial component to this? Is there a guilt component because of the amount of imperialism in African history? Why?
Well, I do talk about these issues in the book, and quite frankly, I dismiss a lot of them. I mean, I think we're very much of the in the world now where we want to find an easy escape route to blame the African situation on something that, you know, is very easy. So, for example, people say, oh, it's the tribes, it's tribalism. My parents come from two different tribes. Yes, there have been some tribal clashes, but, I mean, if we're going to approach Africa and say it's because of the tribes, then we really have a long way coming, because, you know, the fact of the matter is people do not change their tribes. They are what they are, and we do live in communal cities. Perhaps it might surprise some people, but the fact of the matter is that is not the reason that Africa remains underdeveloped today. I do think that there are many Africans who have in the past and perhaps even today continue to benefit from the status quo. But it is my interest as an African and the interest of many Africans across the continent to see Africa become an equal partner on the global stage. And we all know, whether you live in the United States or in Africa or wherever around the world, we all know that the path to ensuring that Africa becomes an equal partner on the global stage is not through handouts and more aid. The way that's going to happen is only when Africa produces, and rather than being viewed as a drag on society and on the economics of the world, starts to contribute to the world through producing amazing young people who can contribute in terms of science and technology and the arts and so on, rather than continuing to be viewed as perpetually people with a begging bowl.
Now, I asked you for exceptions, and you gave me Botswana and, what was it, Ghana?
South Africa.
And so, really, you find South Africa to be a positive exception?
Well, I think they're on the right path. They've taken the harder road, I guess what we would call the road less traveled on the African continent. They have a relatively open economy. Yes, they have some constraints and restrictions on capital conversion and so on, but fundamentally, they have decided not to rely on aid. They come to the international capital markets. They've built a very strong private sector. They have a lot of challenges. And yes, they still have, in some places, 20% of the population unemployed. But you know what? It's much better than the 40% unemployed where they were about a decade ago.
All right. We'll take your questions. And I want to talk to our author, Dambisa Moyo, about the economy as well. 1-8-PRAGER-776. Listening to the Dennis Prager Show. My guest is Dambisa Moyo, M-O-Y-O. The book is up at PragerRadio.com, Dead Aid. And I have a question from a listener in San Antonio that I really want to address, so let me take that if it is what I think it is. San Antonio, Ursula, Dennis Prager, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering why you have people from other countries instead of talking to people from this country, that we have a lot of problems over here.
It's a very fair question, Ursula, and that's why I immediately went to your call. I tried to explain that, but perhaps I didn't do it with great enough detail. First of all, this notion of how do you conquer poverty, either the values, since humans are the same in Africa as they are in San Antonio, the principles are either work or don't work. Do you solve poverty by giving people handouts? And I said in the beginning...
No way.
Okay,
no way.
All right. But that's my point, Ursula. That's my point. If we understand how what we've done that is so terribly wrong with Africa, over $1 trillion transferred from rich to poor, then maybe the idea of transferring money from the rich to the poor won't work in America. If it's not going to work internationally, then it won't work nationally. So this is extremely related. The human nature is universal. Cultures are parochial, but human nature is universal. And so, based on human nature, does giving people money they didn't earn work? Simple as that.
I would actually add on one other thing, if you don't mind me.
Please, absolutely.
In. I would also just say that we live in a global society. It's, you know, we may live in different continents, but, you know, to coin Tom Friedman's book, the world is flat now. The things that happen in Africa, they may seem really far away, but it's much closer than you might think. You know, when you hear a lot of the celebrities going around asking for more money from the American government, that is more money coming out
yes.
of the United States budget. And also, when I say to you that over 60% of Africans are under the age of 24 with very few prospects, because they live in this aid regime, they have very few long-term prospects to find jobs and opportunities to stand on their own two feet, we as a global society should be worried, because this is exactly the breeding ground for political instability, for disease, for chaos, which, you know, may actually come to haunt us on our own doorsteps, wherever we may be around the world. So, yes, Africa might seem like an us and them problem. It actually isn't. It's very much part and parcel of and very important for global policymakers to look at the world and say, are we doing the right thing? Whether I'm in China or India or America, we no longer live in a society where we can be so clearly delineated from other people around the world.
Exactly. The book is Dead Aid, and she herself is African. I mean, it obviously gives you a lot of credibility. I would imagine, too, though, that it must make you, if not enemies, some people who were hostile to your message who were back in Africa.
You know what? I'll tell you. If you go onto my website, for example, there are many, or even on my Facebook site, you'll be amazed at how few negative comments I'm getting from Africans. By and large, the negative rhetoric and sort of even verbal attacks that I receive are coming from Western NGOs. And it's a great disappointment to me that there isn't even a space to have a debate about these issues. The record of aid to Africa is incredibly poor. When you speak to the big aid advocates, they always say, well, you know, 2 million Africans now get HIV drugs. And I completely support that. I think that's fantastic. But after $1 trillion for 2 million Africans only to be on HIV drugs, that's not an acceptable outcome at all. And given the record, look at the poverty statistics in Africa. Things are getting worse, not better. And to have that debate, to me, is a very, very important thing, given the longer-term prospects for economic development of the continent. And so I do feel slightly frustrated that there are pockets of the international community that have chosen to be quite aggressive and negative. But by and large, people, even if they don't agree with me completely, at least feel like it's...
Well, that's why I mentioned Kofi Annan and Steve Forbes on the back of your book. We'll be back again in a moment. Take more of your calls. I want to know why there's so much mass murder in Africa when we come back on The Dennis Prager Show. Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager here. And if Dambisa Moyo, if you ever get to Los Angeles, California, we have to have lunch.
I'll be there on April 27th. I'll hold you to it.
Uh-oh. You see, you know, it's one of those American-type invitations.
I know. Let's have coffee.
No, I'm kidding. It was a real one. Yeah, but it's pretty rare that somebody in London says, I'll be there in 2 weeks. That's very funny. That's very funny. The book is Dead Aid. And if you have to read one, and there are a number of good ones, we've had this topic before, but this is so superb because of its clarity and brevity. Two things I love. Why is there so much mass murder? I mean, right now, what is the number? I mentioned this on my show to my listeners, and it's a revelation to them that no news coverage about this. What is the number now? How many million in Congo?
How many people living there?
Killed.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll tell you, the estimate that I have in the book is that since 1970, I believe it is, there have been over 40 million Africans killed in the context of civil war clashes.
I'm stunned. I did not know that. 40 million?
It's over the number of Russians that were
killed. Yeah, I was just going to say that. That's more than Stalin and the Gulag.
Exactly, which is really traumatic. There are many failed states across the African continent, like Somalia, as of course it's been in the news now with the pirates and so on. But there are a lot of despots. There's still quite a number of presidents that have been in power for 30 years and so on. But I do want to say though, Dennis, that there are some positive stories coming out of the African continent, and it's important to focus on those and to ensure that growth trajectory.
I agree, and I want to get to that. I just want though, I want to understand. You downplayed the significance of tribal allegiances, what was Rwanda if not tribal?
Well, I'm not saying that these things are not tribal. What I'm saying is that is not the only reason for the clashes that we see across the African continent. And to basically blame tribalism as the reason why we as a global society are not able to implement the correct way of doing economic development is completely foolhardy. Yes, there have been clashes that are tribal-based. I myself was in Rwanda just a few months ago for the first time. It is an amazing country. They have turned things around. They are very serious about economic development. They've got incredible infrastructure, and they are looking at a better way forward. To sit around and to dwell on these splits in terms of race or tribe, I just think is a complete waste of time. People, need to move on, and Africa needs to move on. Again, looking to issues of colonialism and the demarcations that came out of the Berlin Conference in 1885, again, to me is a complete and utter waste of time. Yes, these things happen. They will and always will be a part of African history, but they are not the reason why Africa should now become comfortable in this sort of economic malaise and demise of a whole continent. I think we should get past that and understand that there's a way forward. There are other countries like India that were colonized that have moved on. You don't hear Indians going around
bemoaning, right.
Well,
and in fact, similarly, it's one of the ways in which Africans can communicate with each other is thanks to English or French in West Africa. Yes,
absolutely. And Africa is perfectly located. I mean, this is a PR problem. Immediately, Africa starts being viewed as a positive place. It's strategically located, smack near Europe. It's closer to the United States. Certainly, the eastern border of the United States than is China, for example. These are the kind of positive things we need to focus on and get our heads around. Instead of drawing on what in the book I call the Four Horsemen of Africa's Apocalypse, which is war, poverty, disease, and corruption, we can always dwell on those things, but it's not going to help raise African engineers and doctors and so on to talk to them in
terrific.
A negative
way. All right, let's get more calls. Minneapolis, Minnesota, Alejandro, you're on with Dambisa Moyo and Dennis Prager.
Yes, hello. I wanted to share something that happened to me, and I wanted to get your comment. Basically, 3 years ago, I met this young lady in Colombia who tried very hard to get into public universities. She was born in a very meager economic situation and tried again very hard to get into public universities and never could. And I always had a tremendous passion to help someone in those kind of circumstances. And she had a dream to be a dentist. And again, otherwise she would have been a maid or she would have been somebody a very substandard living. So So I decided to pay for her education. I've been doing that for the last 3 years. And the idea behind this is kind of developed into this idea that this is a human being who we've been able to completely change her economic situation. And when I met her just literally 6 months ago, the feeling of thankfulness that she had for all of this was so powerful that her objective in advancing economically was essentially to support others in her family and change.
All right, that's a very good question. And there are a lot of people who, so to speak, adopt somebody in a third world country here in America. What do you think of that?
Well, I think there are two things I would say. First of all, providing a scholarship, for example, I don't view that as aid per se, because there's an expectation that the person finishes their college degree, they go through their coursework, and so on. So you actually have an expectation of a positive outcome, whereas very often you see a lot of aid going into Africa where there's no expectation of an outcome, and in fact, very often the outcome is negative. But there's another fundamental point, and it's a very good question, because yes, it's a good thing to support those type of interventions by providing a scholarship, but remember what those type of things can and cannot do. Yes, they can provide education for a girl, but it will never be insurance that this girl will find a job, because the economies themselves are not growing fast enough to ensure that she'll find a job when she gets out of college or out of high school.
Randy in Costa Mesa wants to know if you believe the aid statistics.
Well, it depends which ones you mean. I mean, I come from a country where 1 in 3 adults is allegedly HIV positive. I do believe that HIV/AIDS is a very serious problem across the African continent.
All right. The book is Dead Aid, and I hope to see you when you come. I'm serious. I would love to meet you, and I hope everybody reads your book, Dead Aid. Stay tuned. I have some thoughts on what you just heard. Dennis Prager here. This was a very powerful interview from my perspective. Let me explain something. I did already in part to Ursula, the woman from San Antonio, and asking why are we interested in this at all? We have so many problems in America. I may be a Don Quixote-like in my battling windmills. Having put that warning out there, I have devoted much of my life to trying to find solutions. And the solutions to human problems lie in values. It's why I departed and took issue so much with the left from a very early age, was they had an economic theory of society, and I had a values theory of society. The solutions, most solutions to human problems lie in individuals having good values. And those values tend to be what we call conservative values. Work hard and get rewarded only if you work hard. That's what works. That's what works for Africa. That's what works for Asia, for Europe, for South America, for North America. That's what works for the human being. It's what works for your children. When they get something for doing nothing, you hurt them. You not only don't help them, you hurt them. That's why I was so opposed to my children getting baseball awards when their team didn't win. They got awards, in effect, for breathing. But that doesn't merit getting a little trophy. Trophies should be given to the winner, not the breather. But we have substituted feeling for thought. I feel for those kids. I want them to feel good about themselves. And the same thing with policy in general. It is, let us feel good about ourselves in doing more for others. But it doesn't help. America was not made prosperous based on the fact that there were handouts. it was made better, prosperous, because it said to the individual, we will give you every opportunity to work hard and then be rewarded. Then you can help the less fortunate, not the more lazy, the less fortunate. We've sent $1 trillion to Africa, and it has been only harmful. The book was Dead Aid. This is Dennis Prager.